Welcome to the podcast today. I am here with Eliza Hall, and I am so excited to talk to her. Eliza is another person that reached out to me who wanted help finding her biological parents and learn more about her biological family. And we were able to help her with that. Nancy from Ignite DNA was able to help look at Eliza's ancestry DNA matches and figure out where her biological family is. And so I'm excited to share that with Eliza and then share some of her family history, her biological family history with her, because I think that it's important even to know as adopted children to learn more about your biological family. So I'm excited to share that with Eliza here. So Eliza, just before we get started, can you introduce yourself and maybe tell a little bit about your story of adoption?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Eliza, as you heard, and I am from Utah. And I knew that I was adopted from an early age. My parents were wonderful in that. And I think that's personally really important for children who are adopted to have that information be open to them. And my parents were very open about me being adopted. The adoption itself is closed, so the information that they had was also very limited. But I knew my birth mother's name. I knew that she may have traveled from the East Coast and came to Utah as a teenager to live in a girl's home and have me here for whatever reason be. So I learned that from my parents. She had left a little notebook. She had knitted a little blanket. There were a few small items that I remember looking at with my mom and a few letters that they had written back and forth in my first year of being born. And those are things that we talked about together. And every year we would sort of have a special day where we would talk about the adoption. And if I had any questions or if there was anything I was curious about, and they always made sure that that was a very open conversation. So I think that was a large part into just the comfortability of sort of how the process has gone.
Yeah, I think that's huge because I'm sure it's kind of a tender topic, and some children that can be hard for them maybe to find out that they're adopted and the process of that. So I'm sure that was great that your parents were open with you about that and that it felt like a very safe topic to talk to them about.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So how long ago did you take your first DNA test?
Oh my, it was quite a while ago. I believe I was still in high school. So that would be around 2015. That's probably a little off, but I did ancestry DNA because I was curious about my heritage. And it was really interesting. I got my results back and it was fun to look at them with my family. And I paid for the little extra to look at traits. And that was really neat. And I actually connected with a few cousins, blood-related cousins from ancestry DNA, and are still in touch with them from that genetic test.
Oh, cool. Cool. All right. Was there any more of that you wanted to share with us before we dive into what Nancy was able to find?
I don't think so. Let's dive
no?
in.
Okay. All right. So Nancy from Ignite DNA was the person who worked on your case. She does DNA research, genetic genealogy for people, and is happy to help any people that are listening with that. If you are watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see what I'm sharing with Eliza here. All right, so this is just a slide that shows some of your maternal DNA matches. So the ones that are colored are the ones that showed up on Ancestry. So here's Eliza in 1990, you were born in 1997. And we have this Jocelyn that is pretty a close match with 969 centimorgans. And then this Brookie up here that is 1629 centimorgans. So through that kind of information, Nancy was able to find your biological mother. And because you knew her name, I'm sure that helped to make sure that we were right. Well, she only had two brothers. So you know that Natalie was your biological mother. Well, it is your biological mother. So here's a little maternal tree that Nancy made up for us to see. So Brookie is actually your grandmother, your biological grandmother. And then J.D. Sexton was your maternal great-grandfather, and his obituary said that he built and drove race cars. So that's pretty neat. They were kind of in the North Carolina area, and that's just a little bit about them. And then here's your paternal DNA matches. So you see that there weren't any super close ones, but be able with this Kermit who has 767 centimorgans, we are able to figure out that, well, with that side, this side over here, and then the matches on this side over here, we're able to see that it was David and Vicky that you descended from. And they had three sons, David and Vicky, and we're not totally sure which son is your biological father, just because of the ages. Nancy assumes that it's Josh, and he has actually passed away. And so, yeah, we'll have to do some more, like if Clint or Todd were tested, then we'd be able to know a little more sure about who that was. So here's your paternal tree with David and Vicky are your paternal grandparents. And then Lewis Breed and Margaret Partlow are your paternal great-grandparents, one set of them. So we'll talk a little bit about them in a little bit, but here are those three sons of David and Vicky. And just because of the ages, we're pretty sure that Josh is your biological father. But Josh was born in 1978, but he also died in 2016. So something interesting that Nancy found is that these two families, so your biological mother's family and biological father's family, were actually living next door for a brief period of time between 1989 and 1990. So at this time, Natalie would, your biological mother would have been 11 to 12 years old, and Joshua would have been the same age. The older two sons would have been 17 or 18 and 19 and 20. So these are those two homes in North Carolina, Havelock, North Carolina. So these two homes there that they lived next door to. So who knows if that started some sort of relationship or what. Funny. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. She was able to find that information that recently about where they lived. So let's stop there for a second. So what are you thinking about, you know, learning a little bit about your biological parents?
I have been curious for years, and I have always wanted to know more. And it's come in sort of waves where I would go through a period where I'm looking up names and I'm trying to find people on Facebook. And then that kind of dies out and I kind of forget about it. And so this opportunity came at a really interesting time because I had actually just connected with Brookie, who would have been my grandmother. Mm-hmm. On Ancestry DNA. And she must have recently done a DNA test because it came up not a week or two before I had been in touch with you. And I had sent her a message not knowing who she was at the time and had said, hey, you're my closest match. It says close family on there. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to know how we're related. And I don't think she's seen the message because usually it says when they've last logged on. And then it wasn't a week or two later that we were in touch and that Nancy had given me some information. And that was really interesting to learn at the time. So it was, it's just been a really intriguing process overall. And I'm just amazed at how much she could discover things that I felt like I was really close on. Mm-hmm. Like Jocelyn, who would be my cousin, I had connected with her on Ancestry and she hadn't seen my message either. And then Brookie. So it's like right in between there was where you guys found Natalie. And that's just incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like I was this close, but I just couldn't get the rest of that info. And I had actually a few years ago, I had actually gone to, I think it's the courthouse that everything was finalized at for my adoption to see what information I could get from them. And I think I got a copy of like a 1 to 2 page paperwork that just had the details and like my parents' signatures, but nothing more. Mm-hmm. And I know it's different in every state, but in Utah, the adoption law, as you probably know, is unless the person is 100 years old or passed away, their adoption stays closed. Oh. And you have to actually petition the court in order to find more, which I have not done. But I had gone that far to know that because I was really intrigued. So this came at a really interesting time. And I've had fun, seems like the wrong word, but it has been really fun to sort of like find people on Facebook and like look up this information and actually share it. You mentioned Kermit on my paternal side. And I had actually connected with him on Ancestry years ago, and he is all into family history. And he has made a huge breed family history website that he shared with me. And then another cousin that I had connected with named Darren, who I didn't see on the tree, probably because he is also adopted, but somehow between that, we're both related.
Well,
he and Kermit are still in touch, and so I shared with Darren and Darren shared with Kermit, and now Kermit has kind of like put together a family tree. And I know that's not what, this isn't what you were asking, but
it just
got me thinking, and it's been really interesting and cool process to share that with them, who are the only biological members that I'm in touch with or that I know, and them being interested for me as well, and intrigued and wanting to know and trying to guess who the dad might be, and they're them having their own guesses, which is kind of fun. So yeah, it's been awesome. It's been amazing. And Nancy did some incredible work.
No, that's awesome. And I found Kermit, like he is very active on Ancestry. I found his tree and it said that he logged in that day. So I'm sure he is on there every day doing things. I'm like, that's fantastic because he's done a lot of work. But yeah, it's very exciting, I'm sure, like, because that's a huge part of who you are, right? And so understanding more about who your biological family is, like, that's a huge and exciting thing. So yeah, I think that's amazing. Okay, well, now we're going to get into a little bit of your biological family history. We'll be right back after hearing about one of our sponsors. Story.com is a new online platform that is completely changing the way you do family history. On Storied, you can build a family tree and find records, but the main difference is the stories. That's really the point of learning about our ancestors, right? To find and write the stories. Storied allows you to easily write your own stories or the stories of your family and ancestors or your friends with pictures in an easy-to-access feed. You can invite who you want to view your stories in your own private group. It's a lot of fun and a really cool way to get the stories accessible to those who want to know them. At Storied, you can add people to your family tree that are associates or friends. We all have those people in our life that we aren't related to, but they feel like family. With Storied, you can tag and add these people to your tree and to the stories you share. So go to storied.com and give it a try for free, and you can get 10% off your first subscription by using the code MEGAN10. And now we're back. So let's go to this image again. So here's your biological mother and then her parents and then your sets of great-grandparents. So a little further back on Brookie's paternal line is the Wimmer family. So here's just some pictures of the Wimmer ranch and different things. It looks like they had some sort of business there. But Thomas Wimmer Sr. So I think he was your fourth great-grandfather on Brookie's line. So you're through your maternal grandmother's line. So he was born in Iowa, and he came to Utah as a child, as a Mormon pioneer, and he became a very successful businessman when he and his brother started the Payson Exchange and Savings. Then he later owned one of the first silver mines in the area. So he became one of the richest men in Payson, Utah, and his home was considered one of the nicest in town. So there's this image. I don't know if you can even see what it says there, but it's an application for the Indian War Veteran Medal. So he served in the Indian War and got a medal because of that, I guess. So here's a picture of him. Wow. He was the son of Robert Wimmer and Elizabeth Wilkerson. He was born in May 10th, 1847 in Harris Grove, Iowa. And he was a farmer and stock raiser. So he was quite successful in his business. And here's actually his home in Payson, Utah. And
it's beautiful.
Yeah. So it stands on the southwest corner of Old Fort Payson in an area known in 144 West Utah Avenue. So I'm not sure if it's still standing.
I'll have to
look that up. Do you live near there?
I'm originally about 30 minutes north.
Oh, okay. There. Yeah. So that'd be really cool if it's still standing. There was a closet on the second floor where the family would hide during conflicts in the late 1870s and early 1880s. I'm not sure what conflicts those were in Utah, maybe.
Yeah.
But that closet was later became a bathroom and one of the first in Payson to have running water installed inside the house. So wow. Thought that was pretty cool. So then his son, so Thomas Jennings Wimmer Jr., he was born in 1867. He's this one on the left there, quite a handsome little man there. And so he was the oldest of 13 children born to Thomas Wimmer and Elizabeth Simons. And in 1900, they moved from Payson, Utah to Green River, Utah. He moved there to raise sheep on 664 acres. So he purchased the Wheeler Box B Ranch, later known as the Ruby Ranch. In 1909, he launched his paddle-wheeled boat, the Marguerite, on the Green River. To commemorate, he and his party, mostly consisting of his children, wrote the date, the name of the boat, and their names on a cliff rock wall above the river. So supposedly that's still standing.
That's
and I
so
saw,
cool.
Yeah, that they had like a family reunion a few years ago where the family went there and actually saw it. And wow. So that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I'll have to hunt that down too.
Yeah. So he owned a Red Star Transfer and Livery Freight Company until his wife died. It said that from that time on, he kind of lost all interest in life in general. He took the horses and turned them loose to roam the desert. So it's kind of a hard time when his wife passed away.
Yeah, wow.
He was also the head boatman for the U.S. Geological Survey on two trips to look for reclamation dam sites at the Boulder or Black Canyon, as it was called then, and Glen Canyon. So he had quite a large part in kind of the surveying of the land and reclamation of those areas. Maybe, I mean, he had a paddle-wheeled boat, maybe something with that, but he was part of that. He even testified in Washington, D.C. as to feasibility, and his testimony is part of congressional record. So that information all comes from this Eileen S. Miller, a tree on genealogy.com. But Nancy kind of took some of that information from there to share. So what do you think about learning about that part of your maternal line? What do you think about that?
That's amazing. I have never, I'm religious and genealogy is really important to people who are religious sometimes, including my family. And I have never been particularly invested as a kid. And I didn't find I related, or if I related, I knew it wasn't who I was related to. And that sounds petty. And it wasn't, I mean, I was a kid and, you know, I was still learning a lot about life, but I always had that. I remember having that thought, thinking like, I'm not related to these people. Not that that doesn't mean that they're not family,
right?
But I was never as invested. And I think that might play a part. And so it's really interesting to hear about people that I am related to.
Yeah, well, I think, and probably, like, I'm sure, are you a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Yeah.
I'm guessing, in Utah. Yeah, so I think that's probably interesting to see that this ancestor was a Mormon pioneer.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. My family has pioneers that came and settled parts of Utah, and my dad has written books and has done a lot of research in that area, and just things that as a kid I didn't find nearly as interesting,
right?
Because of that aspect that I wasn't technically related. So it's amazing to know or start to learn just some of those small facts that now I can tell people about. And it's, when it comes to sharing stories or, you know, it's like, I want to go see that house. I wonder if it still looks like that. I'm genuinely curious.
I hope it does.
I know. Well, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I'm going to have to go hunt it down. I'm not living in that area this summer,
right.
But my sister is, well, my family's not too far. So maybe send them on a quest.
Right.
But
yes.
But
well,
yeah,
it's really cool.
It's interesting. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, like I'm I'm not adopted, so it's hard for me to understand how that might feel, but I'm guessing that when you, like in the LDS religion, family history is a huge part of it. And so you are sealed, like you are a part of your adopted family, right? But I'm sure there is kind of a disconnect feeling like, well, I'm not actually related to these people biologically. So I'm sure learning a bit about those ancestors that you are biologically connected to is a powerful thing.
Most definitely. Yeah.
All right. So now we're going to go to your paternal family. So here's David Lewis was your paternal grandfather. So he actually passed away. I think it was in a helicopter accident. He was a helicopter pilot. And you can see he served in the Navy. I'm not sure. Should have figured out what that uniform is for. Yeah. So David and Vicky, they're your paternal grandparents. They lived mainly in North Carolina while their sons were growing up. They had three sons, Clint, Todd, and Josh. The youngest son would have been closest in age to your biological mother, Natalie. And Nancy determined that the two families lived next door to each other for a brief period of time. Yes, and David was killed in a helicopter crash in 1991. So Vicky is now remarried and lives in North Carolina. And Clint and Todd still live in North Carolina. Josh passed away in 2016, and she couldn't find an obituary. So here's an obituary for David, your biological grandfather. He was from Louisiana, formerly of Diana and Gilmer. It does say that he died on April 23rd in a helicopter crash off the coast of Louisiana. He was born in 1947 in Atala, Alabama. He lived in Diana and attended public schools there and later transferred to Gilmer High School, where he graduated in 1966. He was retired from the U.S. Marine Corps and was employed as a helicopter pilot. And he was a member of the First Baptist Church in Louisiana. So his father was Lewis Chesley Breed. So this is your biological great-grandfather right here. And this is him with his first wife and son. He had a total of four wives.
Wow.
Yes. So I got this information from Kermit. That is him right here. He was his son from his first wife. So Kermit has quite an extensive tree on ancestry. So he has a lot of information there. So I got some of that from there. So he married Mabel Adams. That's her right here, in 1937, and they had one son. That's Kermit. So Lewis Chesley Breed, he enlisted in the Army in 1940 in Fort Benning, Georgia, during World War II. He was 23 years old. So this was after he had married Mabel. And then 4 years later, Mabel and Lewis were divorced in 1944. Then he married Edith Bradley in December of that year, just 2 weeks after his divorce. But it seems the marriage did, yeah. That marriage did not last long, and he married Margaret Partlow, who is your biological great-grandmother, in 1945, 10 months later. Then they had one son, David. So that David who passed away in the helicopter crash was their son. So he's your biological grandfather. So they were married for 30 years until Margaret's death in 1975. And then 3 months later, he remarried his first wife, Mabel Adams, which did not last long. I know. Isn't that crazy? Like 30 years later. Yeah. Anyway, so they remarried. It didn't last long. And he married someone else at the age of 63. He married Becky Jo King and then died in 1989 at the age of 72. So he got around.
He had an interesting life, it sounds like.
Yes, but he did spend the majority of his life married to your biological great-grandmother, Margaret. So he only had those two sons. But I thought this was neat. Here's a part of a letter that he wrote to his mother in 1961. And I don't know if you can read that, but part of it, it just says, let me see, where will I start here? He says, "Mama, do you know where Kermit is? Do you know his address? We tried to find him last September, but couldn't find Mabel at home. I would like to know where he is, if you know." It says David is grown now, and he's making good grades. So David was about, I think he was in eighth grade when he wrote this letter. So Kermit would have been in his 20s. So I don't know how how much contact he it had with Kermit growing up, but it sounds like he, you know, he was hoping to connect with him as he was older there. I thought that was neat.
That's really neat.
Yeah. So here's Lewis in the 1950 census. Here's Lewis and Margaret. They are living actually with Lewis's parents, James and Lily Breed, in Opelika. I'm not sure if that's how you say it. Opelika, Alabama. He was a machinist. And actually, so there's Lewis and Margaret, and then their son David, and then under David is Eugene. And it's listed as a grandson, but he's actually a son. So he is a brother of Lewis. So they kind of recorded that wrong. So he was a machinist in 1950. 10 years earlier in the 1940 census, here he is, and he's listed as a doffer at a cotton mill. So a doffer, I looked that up, is someone who removes the bobbins, turns or spindles holding spun fiber such as cotton or wool from a spinning frame and replaces them with empty ones. So in a cotton mill factory, that was his job there. So here he is with Mabel. This was 1940. He was still married to Mabel and his son Kermit. So Kermit was one year old in that. And it looks like Mabel also worked at the cotton mill as a battery filler. So must have been a cotton mill nearby.
Yeah, down the street.
Yes. Yeah, so then Lewis, he passed away at the age of 72. He was living in Havelock, North Carolina. And here's his obituary. Doesn't really give too much information about him, but talks about his family. So it does say Mr. Breed and the late Margaret Partlow Breed were residents in the area a number of years ago. And he's survived by his wife, Becky K. Breed. So that's his last wife he married. And two sons, Kermit Breed and Major David Breed. And then it lists some of his grandchildren. So that is kind of all that I was able to compile for you about your biological family tree. But what are you feeling right now as you kind of learned a bit more about them?
It's, I don't know, which is actually a good answer for when Nancy had sent me the information initially. And my mom and my siblings, and they were like, what do you like? Are you like happy? How are you feeling? Like, what are you going to do? And I was just, I'm not sure, because it still feels somewhat removed because I don't know these people, even the ones that are living now, like Natalie, looking her up on Facebook or whatnot. I don't know her. And so it's weird thinking that I have a relation to her, but at the same time, it's information that I've been wanting to know for such a long time and information that things that I've been curious about throughout my life, growing up, trying to find what I could find, which was some, but this kind of puts it all together. It's a weird feeling and I don't quite know how to describe it. I'm excited. And at the same time, like I was saying, there's just this removed element where it's like, it's not real yet, almost. And I'm sure one day that won't be the case. Hopefully, maybe in meeting some of the people that I'm related to. But as of right now, it's just sort of a strange feeling.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's a lot to take in and probably will take a while to process. And I know you said that you haven't connected with your biological mother yet or grandmother, but I'm sure as you do that, and I hope you are able to, maybe that will help to make it feel a little more concrete and real there. But
they don't live far from me. I actually found out, which is really interesting. They live in Utah now. And that was the strangest part, was thinking that they lived less than a couple hours from me, you know, thinking I could just drive past. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I do. Nancy might've sent me the address for Brookie if I wanted to send her a letter something, but just so strange to think that I could drive there now, you know, if I wanted to for some reason. So I don't doubt that at some point in the future, I will connect with them and I would like to. But we'll see. You would never know what the future holds. So it's interesting. Cool. Sure.
Well, thank you so much, Eliza, for letting us do this for you. I know it can kind of be an exposing and maybe uncomfortable thing to do, but But I'm grateful that we were able to help you with that. And hopefully you can kind of make some more connections with your biological family and move forward with that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Thank you. It has brought me a lot of just joy and peace knowing that everyone turned out okay in a sort of way of like, you know, I mean, I didn't know the circumstance surrounding my birth, right. But I know that my parents, my mom, when I told her what I knew, she cried and she said, I'm so glad to know that, you know, she's here and she's happy and she's seems to be living the life that she wants as far as what we stalked her on Facebook, right. You know, but I mean, like my mom was, she was so interested to know and she was so happy. My mom was the one that had actually been in touch with her. She has more of a connection in that way than I do, where they had printed letters back and forth for some time. Mm-hmm. So she was just happy and just relieved to know that like she had a family of her own and she was seemed happy and she had gotten an education because that's what she had wanted for me. And so
mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
It was amazing that, yeah, for herself that she could achieve those things and mm-hmm. brings peace to those that sort of maybe knew the circumstances that mm-hmm. Are still somewhat vague to me, but yeah, to my parents and to my grandparents and everyone who supported my parents at that time mm-hmm. during my adoption. And it's been incredible for them to know this information as well. So okay. It's been a huge blessing and I'm very cool. I'm very appreciative.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'm so glad we could help you with that. So grateful for Nancy Landini for working on this case. If you need help with your genetic genealogy, be sure to contact her. I'll put the link to her website in the show notes. But she had one tip to share with you for this podcast, and I'm just going to read what she wrote for that. So Nancy said, don't overlook location information when researching. Even though the individuals of primary focus for this investigation were too young to appear in the most recent available census records, there are a multitude of sources that can provide that information, including town and city directories, school yearbooks, and social media accounts, to name a few. The location information obtained clearly showed the home address proximity of the two families in this case. So go check out Nancy at IGGNITEDNA.com. So like IgniteDNA.com. And she will help you out with any of your genetic genealogy needs. Thanks so much for listening today. I would love it if you could leave a rating and review on iTunes. That really helps our podcast to be seen by more people. Follow me on Instagram if you want more help with your genealogy, more tips and inspiration there. My Instagram account is Megan Hillier, all one word, all together. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm so grateful you're here. Please keep sharing this podcast with your family and friends, and we will see you in 2 weeks.